From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. I agree wholeheartedly with what Alice Waters writes in her foreword to Tanya Holland's California Soul, Recipes from a Culinary Journey West. She says, I may never make these great dishes, but I will reread this cookbook for years to come for the stories of incredible, gutsy, resourceful, intrepid Black people who not only came west to California from the South to begin new lives, but continued lives of bravery, will, creativity, and inspiration for generations following their initial arrival here and continuing to this day. Tanya Holland is the living embodiment of California soul, and I'm happy to get to spend some time with her this morning. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
I'm great. It's so wonderful to have you. I would love it if you would tell us a bit about your own personal story, your family's personal story. Between 1916 and 1970, 6 million Southern African Americans migrated out of the southern states into urban centers in the north and west in two different waves. Tell us about where your relatives are from and any memories you might have of returning to visit those who elected to stay behind.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, my maternal side of the family is from Louisiana, and my grandmother, I know, was born in 1916. I can't remember when my grandfather was born. He was a little bit older. And she had, a bunch of siblings. I know she had at least four sisters, and they all migrated west. She was the only one who stayed in Shreveport, Louisiana. And two of them ended up in outside of Portland in a neighborhood called Vanport, which was African-American neighborhood. A lot of them, well, I know that Aunt Lottie and Aunt Susie like kind of left. They joined the circus, literally, and they made their way west. And in Vanport, there was a Black community that was, some people were working for Kaiser, some were building ships. I know they had a small business called Lottie and Susie's Place. Have the business card. It said they served fried chicken dinners, barbecue, and chitlins, and they were always open. And I found that out 3 years ago, which is amazing. Eventually, Aunt Susie went down to the LA area with two other sisters, and Aunt Lottie stayed in the Portland, Oregon area. And I remember, you know, as a child, my parents moved to Rochester, New York, when my dad got a job with Kodak when I was two. But for holidays, we would either go see his family in Virginia or Louisiana and, you know, just hear all these stories and the aunts who had moved out west. And then when I was about 7 or 8, we took a long road trip across country and visited those aunts and uncles in Portland, in Oakland, in LA area, probably Watts, I think it was. And, you know, whenever we got together with family, it was really all about food. And the food was what they grew up eating in Shreveport. And, you know, that's just something that I've always carried with me, that is really the key to my identity is through my food.
You eventually settled in Oakland. What was the thread that your restaurant played in your bonding to the community and starting to meet people from all walks of life who you end up profiling in your new book?
Well, my first restaurant was located in the neighborhood of West Oakland. It's on the west side of Oakland, but it's actually also the name of the neighborhood. And that is where the Black Panthers were based and started the school breakfasts and where the, you know, the railroad terminated and the community of porters settled. And I just happened to move there because the real estate was less expensive. And my then boyfriend was buying a condo when we moved in. And I realized it was an underserved community in terms of amenities, and a restaurant was needed, and a restaurant that reflected the heritage of the people, who, the predominant, you know, group of people who were there seemed fitting. And so I was shopping around the idea. I found some investors. I got to know my neighbors, one of whom was a city council member. And so, you know, that kind of drew me into the politics. They invited me to neighborhood meetings to talk to developers and other politicians about what was needed in the area, what I could bring to the area. you know, it was just like this first time in my life where I felt like I could make a substantial impact through my work that I could not have even imagined. You know, I just thought I was going to open a restaurant, be a chef who had a restaurant or a restaurateur. But then when I realized like the difference that it makes in terms of the quality of people's life, having an amenity that's local, that also represents the local culture, that gets press and puts the city on the map and brings attention and brings money, and just how that all just, you know, snowballs.
I would love to focus on some of the people behind the food and drink that you feature in your maker profiles. It's such a powerful part of the book and really fascinating. Tell us about Mac McDonald. He was raised in a Texas town so tiny that it didn't even have a zip code, and yet he ended up mastering Pinot Noir.
Mac is one of my favorites. I've known Mac now for almost as long as I've been in the Bay, about 20 years. I was managing a restaurant in Berkeley when he came in and introduced me to his wines. And I describe Mac as the black Mr. Green Jeans because he is always with his pair of overalls and a straw hat. And he's got this deep East Texan accent. And he's so gregarious and so knowledgeable. And he produces the most beautiful award-winning Pinot Noirs. And he and his wife, Lil, are just sweethearts. And, you know, she has been behind him, supporting him with marketing and promotions. And so I always had, wherever I was, I'd try to bring his wine on the list, even though it was quite expensive. At my first location, we did a wine dinner with him, which was well-received. And I featured him in my Brown Sugar Kitchen cookbook as well. And he deserved an encore appearance because he's really unique. He is one of the first African-American winemakers in California to win all those awards. And he's very consistent. And his winery is called Vision Cellars. And he used to also, he used to host these collard green cook-offs. And I participated and I judged one year. And again, that was another way to keep us all connected to the food of our heritage. And I just want everybody to know about him because he is a legend.
So let's talk recipes. I want to ask you about your white barbecue sauce. First of all, what is white barbecue sauce? How is it used? And then how is your version different?
You know what? I didn't grow up eating white barbecue sauce, but I love exploring the diaspora of, you know, African-American, Southern, and soul food. And as I'm creating recipes, I always look for different influences and how I can reinterpret them. And so, you know, traditional white barbecue sauce is mayonnaise-based, which is kind of crazy when you think of barbecue. But I thought it was perfect with seafood for me. So that's kind of what inspired me to create this recipe.
But yours isn't completely white. You add avocado to it.
Right. Well, that
so Californian.
Yes, because I have to make it California. And, you know, with every recipe that I created in this cookbook, I wanted to answer the question, what about it is soul and what about it is California? Because it just is a blend of the two places, you know, the South and California, what inspires me. And again, soul food is anywhere there's a group of African Americans. And so wherever we've migrated to, you're going to find soul food, but it's usually rooted in the South. And then the soul food in California, to me, has to have the California influence. And this one, this is like a quintessential recipe, I think, for that, because it, like you said, it has the white barbecue sauce, but the avocado makes it California.
Which do you think of your recipes in this collection is the most emblematic of your family's history and your own California sensibilities?
Well, let me think. If I had to pick a recipe that is most emblematic of my family history, it would have to be gumbo. And here I created a recipe, gumbo zerb, with Dungeness crab and prawns. Obviously, my family was not using Dungeness crab, but again, adding the California touch. But gumbo is just, you know, I'm rooted in that. My mom always made gumbo. for her friends in Rochester, my aunts. Everybody makes it different, too. Everybody has their own interpretation. But the idea is that this is our food. Like, you're not finding gumbo coming from any place else in the country but Louisiana.
I love that. Thank you so much, Tanya.
Thank you, Evan.
Tanya Holland is a chef, restaurateur, and author. Her new cookbook is Tanya Holland's California Soul, Recipes from a Culinary Journey West. We've got a recipe for her grilled shrimp and corn with that avocado white barbecue sauce we talked about on our website. Head to kcrw.com/goodfood. Coming up, Asma Khan is a culinary force, and she comes by it naturally. The London-based Chef's Table star tells us about how her mother became the most famous caterer in Calcutta. That's next.